Intelligent Transportation Systems Podcast. Hello everyone, everywhere. Welcome to the ITS Podcast, your periodical podcast on intelligent transportation. This is episode 15 for July 2014. I'm Javier Sánchez Medina from the Intelligent Transportation Systems Society. We have prepared a special issue of the ITS Podcast, this time about the just closing 2014 IEEE Intelligent Vehicle Symposium, also known as IV14. We have comments from its organizers, from the Intelligent Transportation Systems Society president, plus a memorable interview recorded to Professor Mohan Trivedi, one of the most prolific authors in our community. We recorded all of this on-site in Dearborn, Michigan last month. We also have an East Mini section with a call for a conference that may be of your interest. Please check it out. And this is it. Let's jump into it, starting with the News Mini section. Please relax and enjoy it.
This is the News Mini section for episode 15, July 2014. Please circulate this information. The IEEE Conference on Vehicular Electronics and Safety, to be held in India next December, is now accepting submissions for participation and will be doing so until August 1. This conference brings together researchers and practitioners to discuss vehicle electronics and research and application aspects of safety systems. Please check out this podcast website for further information, including the call for papers link.
Okay, we will now put together some comments recorded on site regarding IV14. We will start with Jiaobin Chen, who is co-chair of IV14, and Matthew Barth, president of the IEEE Intelligent Transportation Systems Society. Then we have Tankuta Kamar, program chair of the event, to end with some comments from Umit Özguner, a very well-known researcher on intelligent vehicles, which has also a very long service sheet as volunteer at the ITS Society. Shall we start?
We are now with Jiaobin Chen. He is co-chair of this Intelligent Vehicle Symposium. Hello, Professor Chen. Can I ask you, what was the biggest challenge you have had to solve to organize this conference?
I think there are many, many challenges to organize such a large conference. First of all, when we put an organizing committee together, we have members from all three big continents. To get people together to talk about a plan, to plan out the conference, including all the logistics, hotel, venue, facilities, and then technical programs. So it's kind of challenging. So we often have a teleconference meeting, in the middle of night for some people, and lunchtime or dinner time for other people. And two is we're all very busy professionals. We're amateur in terms of organizing such conference, and so time and schedule and everything. So a lot of pressure is probably on a lot of organizing committee members, such as local arrangement chair, technical program chair, co-chairs, and dealing with a large number of submissions and a lot of questions from authors, especially the crunch time towards conference registration, paper submission, payment, and all kind of issues from people all over the world. So finally, I think we made it. We have had a wonderful sessions and programs and big turnout.
Well, congratulations on that. And we are also with Professor Matthew Barth from University of California in Riverside. He is president of the Intelligent Transportation Systems Society, mother society of this conference. Matthew, what is unique about this particular conference? Being single track, how is this conference different from the other flagship conference from our society, the ITSC?
Well, this is one of the best conferences that we have in terms of what we do within the ITS Society. So you mentioned single track. So it's very different than our typical ITS conference where we have multiple tracks. But what's great is all the effort that Jiaobin and his team did to connect these different parts of the world to come together, we're literally all in the same room. And we are more or less talking together, comparing notes on all these different things with intelligent vehicles. It really brings out a lot of interesting discussions. So we get to find out what Europe is doing, compare it to what's going on in the U.S., what's going on in Asia. It's really a unique opportunity. So, again, I know it's a lot of work for Yao Bin and his team to pull these different things together. But once it happens, it's great. It's extraordinary, and it's really neat to see all the different talks.
Great. So congratulations to you, too, for this.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
We are now with Tankuta Kamar. He is program chair of the IV 2014. Congratulations, Tankuta. Can you talk about the program of this conference?
Sure. Thank you. Actually, I am very honored to serve as a program chair for IV 2014 symposium. Actually, IV 2014 is a single session symposium, and this program is 3 days program. We are on the second day, and right now the program is running very successfully and smoothly. Everyone is quite happy, and tomorrow we will close the symposium and we will do demonstrations, and everyone hopefully will go back to home safely.
Okay, are you crossing your fingers for tomorrow's weather?
Sure, of course, because this will be in parking lots, and we all cross fingers. There will be 4 demos, exciting demos. They are coming from the universities, very well-known, popular universities. And hope to see this demo, because we learn a lot, and we can go back home and do the same demos and improve the demos. They are very important for us.
Okay, great, thank you. We are now with Professor Umitos Gunnar. He is co-chair of IV 2014. Hello, Umit. How is it going? Are you satisfied with the results?
I am satisfied with the results. I'm quite happy. There's a large turnout. We have almost 400 people. I had chaired this symposium 11 years ago, and maybe there was about half of these people at that time. So it's interesting that even though this is a high-tech area, and you know, high-tech areas come and go, but the IV area has been growing, and there's more excitement here. In fact, we had some exciting talk even from somebody from Washington. So I'm happy. Everybody seems to be interested in the research that's reported. And the poster format allows a lot of interaction. So.
Right. Well, congratulations and thank you for organizing this.
You're very welcome. It's part of the ITS Society's activities. And, of course, I, for many years, have been trying to support the ITS Society.
Right. Thanks.
Well, are you perceiving the excitement we lived there in Michigan last month? That was some conference, huh? So an enriching career of discussions, very illustrative panels, and fantastic plenary sessions. But if you are ready, let's go now with the icing of this cake, a very interesting interview to Professor Mohan Trivedi. It is fully loaded with insight comments regarding many hot topics on intelligent transportation that we are sure you will appreciate. Enjoy!
We are with one of the most recognized researchers on intelligent transportation systems, Professor Mohan Trivedi from University of California at San Diego. He is director of the Computer Vision and Robotics Research Laboratory. His research record is really humbling. Just a few facts to visualize his influence. According to a 2010 survey conducted by the IEEE Transactions on Intelligent Transportation Systems, Professor Trivedi is recognized as the most prolific author and top 3 most influential, by citations counts, of the decade 2000-2010. He has mentored over 30 doctoral, 70 masters, and 10 postdoctoral fellows. He has given up to 70 keynote presentations and international conferences. On the top of it, last October, 2013, he was very well deservedly awarded with the IEEE ITS Outstanding Research Award. That was just a brief description of our interviewee today, but let me welcome him now. Hello, Professor Trivedi. It's a real pleasure and honor to have you with us today. Could you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. It's indeed wonderful to be with you.
One of my great pleasures is to come to these conferences and meet young scholars. And so I'm very happy that now you are actually providing us an opportunity to reach even wider audience than those that we can interact in person. Thank you.
We also have a very well-known volunteer at the ITS Society, Professor Brendan Morris from University of Las Vegas, Nevada. He will be helping out with this fascinating interview. Hello, Brendan. Thank you for joining in.
Hi, Javi. Thank you very much for having me. And it's a pleasure to be here and to interview Mohan Trivedi, my former advisor.
Great.
Wonderful.
Very well. Let's start. Professor, your contribution is so huge that it is really complicated to find a starting point. Let me try like this. Let me ask you about that famous piece of literature, your paper titled Detecting Moving Shadows, Algorithms and Evaluation. Could you please talk about our research?
Sure. It was done probably about 15 or so years ago, and the genesis of that was we had started working on some vehicle and traffic detection analysis systems. And as things happen, we started realizing that we were facing some problems which were unexpected. We were taking data from the interstate which runs around our campus, and things would work beautifully well whenever we were able to get data during about noontime. But then when we'll go in the afternoons or late afternoons, the same algorithm which worked so beautifully started failing. And we had a very bright young researcher, Ivana Mikic, in our lab, and she finally figured out that the places where we were missing things or having difficulty detecting were all those which had heavy shadows. And Ivana was really a very, very innovative young scholar. And she was one of the earlier machine learning based type of a statistical learning based classifier contributor. And she started looking at it and figured out a model, not for the vehicles, but really for the shadows. And that turned out to be quite a nice work, and she submitted it to one of the ICPR conferences. And at that conference, I realized that there were other researchers from Italy who were also interested in doing shadow analysis, but they had another approach. And this was a young assistant professor probably at that time, Professor Rita Cucciara. And she came and introduced one of her students and said that this work is of interest to her. And we developed the relationships of one of her PhD students, who is now a full professor and fellow of IIPR, Andreas Prati, was sent to work in our lab. And it was just beautiful collaboration. Ivana and Andrea worked together, and that was the genesis. But I think in some sense it has been of some use to the community, is that it was not just introducing some techniques, but we started realizing that in order for it to be used, we really need to come up with metrics so we can evaluate how different approaches can work on the same data set. So in some sense, that was the first time shadow-related, vehicle-oriented, or even human activity-oriented database was prepared in our lab, and we made it publicly available about 15 years ago. And we also introduced a few metrics to compare different approaches. And I'm very happy that people are still using that database and some of those metrics. But that probably was one of the things that we learned as researchers early on, that it's not just for us to do a new algorithm development, but the contribution would be better, it would find better use if we also provide data sets and allow people some way to do comparisons with old work, with new work, on the same standards. And we have kept on doing that. Even Professor Morris here, when he was not Professor Morris, but even the work that he did, which came in the same stream of things for looking at vehicles and doing even more complicated things in just detection, he went out and made his data publicly accessible. And I think now it has been established trend in my mind in our
disciplines to do that. And so that helps us in the community.
That's interesting.
So, Mohan, you introduced a new architecture called DIVA, standing for Distributed Interacting Video Arrays, to derive situational awareness in intelligent environments. And this has been applied in a number of surveillance projects, and you've gotten quite a bit of recognition for this. Could you explain what it's about, and in particular, what does the interacting component in it mean?
Yeah, so DIVA, it has distributed interactive video arrays as a thing. In Sanskrit or Indian terms, it means light, and DIVA certainly has a connotation in European languages also, important thing. But I think we really started because of a necessity. We started looking at large transportation infrastructures for a project that we were doing for Caltrans, where our interest was to really look at the entire segments of interstates and can we do something to do congestion relief or incident detections in time. And it was obvious to us that, I mean, this is such a long stretch that you cannot be just seeing that thing with single camera or limited number of cameras. But it also was a thing that where we started realizing that congestion or accidents, they kind of just don't happen at one spot or one time, but there are trails which are going to happen something before and something after, which also you would like to see. A good example that I used to give is that of, say, hit and run accident, that somebody hits the car somewhere and then he runs away. And our interest is not just only to detect that there was an accident, but you may also want to find out where the person is running to. So if things like that happen, we needed multiple perspectives, but also some kind of an interactivity among those cameras where an event which has happened at a particular time in a particular space is going to have a trigger for a camera to get ready at another time and another place. So that was basically the way we started thinking, and then their interaction can have multiple meanings. I mean, obviously it can, different cameras can interact with one another for different cues, different events, or humans can also interact with some of them, not on a standard way of just turning the cameras, pan, tilt, and zoom, but even giving higher level commands, like you have started doing, which might say that, hey, I might be interested in looking at certain trajectories, and then only those things I would probably teach my system to be aware of or to monitor.
Mohan, and you have also several works on vehicle behavior prediction and anomaly detection. This seems really hard to do, at least as long as there are still humans behind the driving wheels. What were your achievements in that sense?
Very interesting. Yeah, in fact, I would like to say that our interest is more on human behavior analysis and prediction rather than vehicle. But you're absolutely right that a lot of our effort has been to think about a vehicle which is controlled either completely or partially on a real drive in an environment. And how does this system, which has got the vehicle, environment, and driver, evolves or emerges in changing dynamics? It has been interesting problem for us to work on. And the whole idea there was, in a way, in artificial intelligence or intelligent systems, the quest is to come up with more and more intelligent systems, where intelligent might have different meanings to different people. But I think once we see capabilities, we do recognize that some of these things just cannot be done by a pre-programmed manner, so to say, but they are the ones which are learned because of what is going on in the world over time. So when we started looking at it, and we were interested in also being engineers, solve problems which are of importance to the society, we started realizing that there are lots of accidents, just too many, everywhere in the world, where people always say, that, oh, the vehicle was very good, the roads were also clear. However, the driver was the main cause of the thing. So I always remember in my mind that there is this very famous story that people tell in America that they caught a very famous bank robber. And the police and the judge started asking questions that, I mean, why do you rob banks? So this guy says that very quietly, because that's where the money is. So in my mind, I mean, if people say, why do you work on humans rather than just on vehicles or just on roads? Because I think accepted wisdom is that accidents happen because the problem is with the humans. So just from that application perspective, that if we are trying to solve a problem which is going to make things safer, then we want to understand things which are probably the most important contributors to those.
Mahan, you know, it has been recently published that California will be issuing autonomous cars licenses from next September on, allowing them to circulate merged into regular traffic. What are your thoughts? Do you dream of a future with fully automated vehicles in our roads, yielding to a zero fatalities mobility?
Very good. Yeah, well, I would love to live in the world which has got zero fatalities on the roads or zero fatalities on your college campuses. But that's really, in my mind, a utopian vision. What happens today, as we have been discussing, this is a complex system which has got vehicle as one component, roads and infrastructure as the second main component, and humans as the third component. Now, we can think about a future where the roles that different things play can go up and down. And I certainly, robotics is something that we have been, it was one of our first loves, that we are aware of it. And in some sense, autonomous robots are those which have been coming around, and many of the things that we are hearing in popular press, in my mind, they are nothing but an extension of autonomous robots that people started working very seriously in the 1980s onwards. And I think the technology has come to a stage where interesting experiments which are beyond just the vacuum cleaner, which is autonomous, but basically the same thing, which is, can it go from place A to B without colliding on a particular trajectory? So if there is a dog, you are going to avoid that. If there is a cat, kitten, you are going to avoid it. But in one case, it is inside the room. In another case, it is on the road. But basically, it is a beautiful maturity that we are seeing of autonomous mobile systems. What we are talking about, in my mind, is a little bit different. I would, as a species, would like to be involved in the future with a role to play in this very exciting future where machines are going to get more and more powerful, but I don't want to be just a guy who sits in the lounge doing nothing or probably meditating on higher spiritual issues, but I'm still at a level where I would like to interact with my toys, with my machines, with my children, or whatever you want to call that. And in order to do that, I certainly need to understand what those machines are all about. So what are their capabilities, what operating systems that they use, what buttons I need to push. But I also believe that I need to do what I need to do to allow the machines to understand who I am about, what kinds of affects, states, gestures I make, which are meaningful for the machines to have understanding, which would be kind of mutually rewarding. And hopefully it would provide us a new level of intelligence, because you and I not only just feel good when we see each other, but we like to communicate, we like to share our plans and intentions and all. And I do want to believe that the machines of the future, whether they are our cars or they are our toys, they would also do a different thing if they understand what we are all about. And from that perspective, I think it is important that we develop systems where human behavior, human intentions, human gestures are understood very efficiently by the machines. And machine is going to use their sensory systems. So that's going to be their cameras or their whatever. And it is going to be done in a contextually relevant manner. So we need to understand each other, and we also understand the space and the time in which we are residing at one time. So that kind of a future, in my mind, requires us to have systems which are basically communicating with one another at different levels of abstraction. And I believe that need would never be taken away, that we will have systems, whether they're our cars or our rooms or our toys, who would require understanding of humans in a natural environment. So that's one of the driving forces, so to say, in looking at intelligent vehicles the way we look, rather than completely driverless, self-driving or autonomous robotic systems that others are doing very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mohan, quite a number of years ago, you introduced a principle that's been widely adopted now for driver assistance systems, the looking in and looking out, or LILO vision. Could you tell a little bit about this and explain it to our listeners what this is all about and how it's changed the way we think about driver assistance systems?
Yes. We were probably one of the most persistent developers of that idea, but I think others are also now thinking about it and doing something. But the basic idea is again this, that in a complex world where there are different things which go into our systems to make sense out of the contextual environment, it is not just important to know how things which are looking in one direction, that I think you and I are having a conversation which is in my mind at a different level of efficiency as well as a rewarding way, because we are able to look at each other and see some of the things which might involve how I react to your question, whether I'm attentive or whether I'm dozing off, and all of those things. And I think if we are developing a vehicular system which is being driven, or at least human-centered, I should say, where a driver or other occupants in the car are fellow passengers with a robotic vehicle, the robotic vehicle needs to make sure that what you are seeing and what it is seeing is in some sense consistent according to the expectations of a safe drive. So if it happens that the robotic vehicle is looking at a stalled emergency road vehicle in front of it, but it also figures out that I am busy doing something that I should not be doing, but playing with my radio or something, then that is the time it will have to do something to alert me or do something for me. But if it thinks that because it has seen that particular obstacle, it makes a decision on its own, whereas I had the intention of doing something on my own, then that behavior that the machine does would be seen as an annoyance rather than an assistance. So to make better sense out of a system which has got things which are happening outside, as well as a consumer of that system and an interactor is inside, we need to understand the whole.
That's very interesting. Well, we have to make now a short break, but we'll be back in no time. So please stay tuned.
Hello again. Do you want to get a warning to your email with every new podcast? It's easy. Visit itsp.ciei.com. There you can subscribe by entering your email address both at the right side widget or the bottom right follow tag. Once introduced to your email, you will get a confirmation message where you should click in the activation link it contains. However, if you are more like the kind of smart apps fan, you can search for this show at your preferred podcasting application. Search for the keywords Intelligent Transportation and you will find us. Remember, intelligent transportation. Thanks for listening to ITS Podcast. Let's get back to our interview.
Very well, we're back with Professor Mohan Trivedi from University of California at San Diego. Mohan, you're usually called as a consultant for many automobile companies and traffic management administrations. For example, you were appointed as expert panelist for the Strategic Highway Research Program of the U.S. Transportation Research Board of the National Academy of Sciences. Can you share with us what is around the corner regarding highways? Some are appointing highways to be the very first application of automated driving, maybe in the form of a platoon coordinated systems. Can you gift us with any hint on where are we heading with this regard?
Sure. Yeah, well, one of the reasons why we interact with auto companies and government policymakers and all is really to fill in the deficiencies that an academic would have, because we have one perspective and one way of looking at things. But I think nice thing is that we have been very fortunate that many people in the industry have been great partners and collaborators, as well as many people from the government agencies with whom we have been able to develop relationships. That has been critical to little contributions we have made. But I think this particular one that you mentioned is kind of interesting, because it was probably about 15 years ago that I ran into a gentleman who used to be the director of safety for NHTSA, which is our highway safety agency in Washington. And his name is Dr. Mike Perrell. He has retired since. But he was basically talking to us, saying that he's very much interested in some of the research we had started on this looking in, looking out type of systems in early 2001 or two. And then he said that, I mean, he likes that idea, but he basically was not sure whether it has some applicability for things beyond a research lab. And I said that that's where he comes in play. And independently also, he was interested in learning why accidents happen and what people do in a forensics way. That, I mean, after accidents happen, people question the people who had accidents. But our memory is not perfect, especially if it has been under trauma and all. So what can we use in terms of sensors and all that, so we can get information about the vehicle, outside condition, and this. So he started a program on his own, which eventually became what is known as a 100-car study. But it was basically some of the things we were doing multiplied by much larger number than we had one car, and these were more. But the point there was not to do anything about active safety, but really to understand how people behave. And that was good, because I think when that started happening, other people from other disciplines, like human factors people, accident analysis people, traffic management people, they also started thinking in the way that this little lab in San Diego was doing. And that allowed also people to understand the importance of good data if you are going to make machine learning approaches to come to fruition or to become useful. So that 100-car study led them to develop a much larger thing. Initially, it was thought about that we can do 10,000-car studies, which can run for 2 years on different parts of the United States, and then that data will come. Eventually, it became like a 2,000 or 3,000-car study, but it is still probably the largest data collection project which has happened. And I was on that particular panel at that time to give some more inputs regarding what we had done and if that can be of application. And I think what has happened now is that that whole study, which is called Natural Assisted Driving Study, with this 2,000 cars, has completed its data acquisition phase. And now we are working to develop computer vision machine learning tools where the people who are going to analyze that data, not the experts in the disciplines that we work in, but those who are sister disciplines like human factors or accident analysis or even psychology and all. they would like to use it without really understanding how do you do thresholding and how do you do hidden Markov model analysis and all. And we would like to simplify our things without really sacrificing the robustness and nitty-gritty of mathematical computer vision so that it becomes useful as a development toolbox to the others. I would hope that once these things get used by people outside our disciplines, they will start understanding the implications of better road design, better introduction of a certain autonomous driving assistance technology, or even some abilities where we can assist seniors. And all of us are going to get there, some like me, sooner than you would. But what happens when we lose some of our perceptual capabilities or our reaction capabilities? Can we provide in that selective manner that if I'm driving, they would do different things than if Professor Morris is driving? He doesn't need so much help because his peripheral vision is much better. His reaction time is much better. So can we have systems which are going to adapt to the needs of the drivers in a very specific manner? I think that kind of stuff is coming. And there are many challenges, but I do believe that there are wonderfully exciting possibilities now.
Oh, that's really, really interesting. Very well, this is it. Professor, this is not the first time I say it to you, but you set up an example for many of us. So thank you very much. We really appreciate your participation.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Brendan, thank you for helping out with this interview.
Javi, it's been a real pleasure to be here. I appreciate you inviting me.
Right. Goodbye, professors.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, the end of this episode is getting closer now. We are sorry for that. We have a strong interest in knowing how you like this episode, so please feedback us with your comments and improvement ideas. We did put a lot in it, and our reward is, of course, knowing firsthand what works well and what can be improved. So please tell us. This podcast is sponsored by the IEEE Intelligent Transportation Systems Society, website designed and managed by the Innovation Center for the Information Society at the University of Las Palmas de Gran Canaria in Spain, soundtrack developed by Rubicon, language advisory by Manuel Arbelo, and Professor Sean Williams from Clemson University, South Carolina. We'll be back soon bringing you again the cutting edge of science at the Intelligent Transportation Systems podcast. Thanks for listening, and please drive safe.